This is Recovery Radio, the first radio show in Rhode Island to offer useful information for the purpose of helping men and women suffering from alcohol, drug, and other addictions. Recovery Radio's goal is to raise awareness about the services and organizations available in the state dedicated to improving the outcome of those with addictions. Recovery Radio, hosted by John Tassoni and presented by Phoenix Houses of New England. Call John now at 437-5000 or 888-345-0790. Now, here's John Tassoni.
Another Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. Thank you for joining us today. In the studio today is Norman Zorkloss. And Norman is a branch manager for Homebridge, and he is a financial service gentleman, and he's got a great story to tell. Welcome, Norman, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, John. Glad to be here.
So tell me about Norman.
About Norman, about Norman's recovery and about Norman's problem that he had and he could have again.
No, you're not going to have it again.
Well, could. You can never leave that out. I mean, if you ever think that you're invincible from it or cured, that's when it can sneak up on you. But, you know, I come from a good family. You know, you hear a lot about different people with problems and addiction, and, you know, they get a story where they kind of didn't really have much of a shot when they were younger. But I came from a great family, educated, went to Catholic grammar school, LaSalle Academy, and college, graduated college. Always was a bigger drinker than my friends. Just means I could handle a little bit more and maybe lasted a little longer than they did. But, you know, I drank, and one of the things that, you know, drinking did for me was it kind of gave me that edge that I felt I never had, to be able to speak to people. I was kind of a shy kid, females, everything. It just kind of gave me that little edge, and I liked it. And I went with it, and it worked for a while, you know. Then I had to go into the real world and, you know, get a job after college, and I got married in 1998. And somewhere between then and 2000, my drinking escalated from social drinking to heavy drinking. Mm-hmm. And that means I was drinking in the morning sometimes to get over what I had done before.
So what age are we talking about?
I was born in 70, so about 28 to 32 when I ultimately got sober.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it was 4 years of, you know, I don't remember much. I'm sure a lot of my family members would tell you better, but it was definitely not a fun time, and drinking was not fun at that point.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know.
So you out of college, you went to work, or what happened?
I went to work for a company. I did very well. It was a bank, but I did mortgages, and we were in commissions and sales, and I excelled at it. I was top of the whole organization, and making a lot of money, and loving life. You know, I was loving it. You know, going out Fridays and going out Thursdays and weekends, of course. You know, and then you know, drinking became a problem, and it affected everything. It affected my marriage. It affected my work. It affected everything. And I went from a person that would drink, you know, say after 5 o'clock, after 6 o'clock, to a person that kind of drank when he could. You know, I would drink during the day, and I'd try to get every chance I could to do it.
Mm-hmm. What about your wife?
My wife actually quit drinking prior to me, but she has no problem with alcohol. She can still drink, and she does very occasionally. But she watched what was happening to me, and the person that she fell in love with and respected became this person she didn't know. You know, mm-hmm. I was weak and just not that person. So she actually quit drinking just because she was disgusted with what it was doing to me while I was still drinking.
Mm. So what happened ultimately with the bank? Did you
get to the point where just about everyone knew I had a problem, and I thought I was hiding it pretty well, but apparently I wasn't. And the owner of the bank, who was a family friend, had sat me down just the way kind of we're sitting now, and said, you know, he was actually an alcoholic, and he told me that he was recovering alcoholic, but he told me that he knew I had a problem, so he didn't even give me the chance to say I'm all set, and this is a weak moment. He knew I had a problem, and that I had to make the decision whether to go to recovery for 30-day program and come back and have my job waiting for me, or leave. because he couldn't have that in his business. And it was a Friday afternoon when he told me after everyone had left and said, take the weekend to think about it. And I looked him in the eye and said, I don't need the weekend. I don't need this job. And that was it. I left my job, and then my drinking had no restrictions because I didn't have to worry about going to work.
Mm-hmm. So how bad was it when you left your job? You could drink all day long if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, it
obviously
was,
you had no money coming in at that point.
Right. Well, I mean, there was unemployment, and there was, you know, there's always a way to make cash, and that's I was basically trying to get money just to drink.
Hmm.
I mean, everything else that I should have been doing as a husband, you know, paying the rent. I mean, and then we ended up buying, you know, and we actually owned a house then, actually. It just kind of was secondary to, number one was drinking, because without alcohol in me, I couldn't function. I needed it. At that point, my body needed to drink, and I was drinking just so I could do normal things. And I wasn't doing them very well because I was drunk. But in and out of detoxes, accident rooms, you know, ERs, just to, you know, because, that, you know, if you drink that long, you're going to get sick. And just so I can get my second wind, you know, I was a regular at the ERs where I just want to get a IV to get, you know, through these withdrawals and then the, you know, some medication. And then I just go right back to drinking.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it was a regular thing.
When you went to detox, I mean, I know people tell me horrible stories about going to a detox.
Mm-hmm.
And about, you know, I've had a number of people on the show who their wives stayed with them, and some their wives have left for obvious reasons.
Right.
Obviously, you have a special wife because she stayed with you and she helped you guide you through your ordeal. But how difficult was that? I mean, do you have children?
Well, we do now. They've never seen me drink, thank God. They're twins, 8 years old.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, we do now. Yeah, I mean, it's a special person to put up with an alcoholic, especially if you're living in the house and married to one. Personally, I don't think I could do it. I mean, I've been to at least 8 detoxes that I know of, and probably more. And then that's not counting just overnights at an ER,
yeah,
you know, just to feel better when you get, you know, and then out on the streets and driving. I got a DUI in 2000. I got into a pretty bad car accident, totaled the other car, was arrested. And this was a night that I was supposed to be home at 6:30 to take her to dinner. At 11:30, I'm in the police station. So there's 4 hours where she received a phone call that I was in an accident. And then I called and she hung up right away. But yeah, I mean, that's the life. I mean, it's just horrible, and I don't know how she put up with it, to be honest with you.
Now, you told me a little bit about your brother before we went on the air, and how your brother really made the difference on trying to help you. Tell us about what happened that night.
Well, the last detox that I was in, it was May 20th that I actually went into the ER of 2003. And I had a high blood alcohol level. I don't know the exact one, but it was up there. And the way that the ERs work, which I was very versed in at this point, was they would take you in and you went in a special room away from everyone's, because usually the alcoholics and the drunks and all whatnot are allowed. And they just kind of gave you what you needed, you know, maybe give you a Xanax or, you know, something to calm you down, an IV to get your fluids back in. And once your blood alcohol level reached to a normal level, a legal level, I should say, they gave you the ability to sign out. And they had a social worker stop by who, you know, said you should go into rehab, you should go into detox. But I was pretty well versed on that, too, where I knew what to say and told them why I couldn't and that I was going to do it as soon as I took care of what I made up to say I couldn't. And at this point, my brother had come into the ER, and I'm not really sure exactly why to this day he came in. It was at Rhode Island Hospital, and I don't live near Rhode Island Hospital. But he came in, and I was putting my work boots on, my shoes. And I was getting dressed because they had just cleared me to leave. And I signed all the paperwork to leave and turned everyone down. And he came in, and he asked me what I was doing because I was getting dressed. It was clear that I wasn't staying where I was. And I said, well, I'm all set. discharged, can go home. And he said, well, he doesn't think that's a good idea, which we were talking weeks and months before that. And, you know, he expressed that he definitely had a problem. And we weren't really talking, actually. We were yelling at each other. He was yelling at me, and I was kind of listening. But he was very upset that I was going. And I said, well, look, his name's Paul. I said, Paul, there's nothing you can do. I said, you know, I can sign out. The doctor's already gave him paperwork, and I'm going. I'm sorry, you know. I'm sure I said something a lot worse than that, but that's the short version and the nice version. Then he left, and he came back with the doctor, and the doctor looked at me and said, oh, your brother had just told me that, you know, that you're suicidal. And I said, no, I'm not suicidal. What do you mean? He said, well, he just basically told me that, and as a result of that, we have to keep you here for 5 days under a medical cert, I believe it was called, which is a danger to yourself.
Right.
And that was it. That was me entering detox against my will, but it turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to save my life, actually.
Mm. So you spent five days in the hospital. I want to talk about when you came out, when we get right back.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. You'll listen to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. We'll be right back. Phoenix House, a national nonprofit leader in the treatment of substance use disorders and co-occurring behavioral health issues. Phoenix House provides comprehensive care for medically monitored withdrawal, available in Rhode Island and now our new facility in Quincy, Massachusetts, to residential and outpatient treatment and recovery housing for adults. For teens, we offer intensive outpatient treatment and comprehensive outpatient services. At Phoenix House, our highly professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, and a sliding fee scale is available. So give us a call at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. That's 1-800-378-4435, or go online and visit us at phoenixhouse.org. Take your first step to the path of recovery today at Phoenix House. Accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Facilities, is a national standard of excellence. Phoenix House of New England is a proud sponsor of Recovery Radio. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassone. Norman Zoklis is in the house, and Norman is with Homebridge. He's the branch manager in Smithfield. And Norman and I have been talking about his issue with alcohol, and he's been sober for 13 years now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So you're in Rhode Island Hospital. Your brother tells the doc that you're suicidal. They got to keep you for 7 more days. What happened after that?
Well, I went to the detox section of the hospital, which was in the Jane Brown building. I just, you know, just kind of sat around and felt terrible because the withdrawals were kicking in. And then I'd say the next day I was there, I started to have pains in my stomach, wasn't feeling good. And it was different than the other. I mean, I've been through withdrawals before, so I kind of know what they feel like. This was a little bit different. And they thought it was withdrawals. And come to find out, while I was in detox, from the time I got there to when they figured it out, my appendix had burst. While I was in detox, and luckily I was in Rhode Island Hospital, they took me down for a CAT scan, and from the CAT scan, I went right into surgery. That was it. Mm. And that was unimaginable. And it made the withdrawals a little bit easier because I was on all kinds of
meds. Yeah,
but it was bad. I mean, the doctor told me if I hadn't been near a hospital or at least close by, I would have died. You know, I mean, it was that bad. They couldn't remove the appendix the normal laparoscopic way. They had to go right in there. And then,
So how long were you in the hospital for that?
After I was in 3 days in detox. The third day went to surgery, and then I was in. It was definitely after Memorial Day. I don't know the exact day, but it was probably about 7 days that I was in. Mm-hmm. And then even when I was home, I was basically contained to the couch because the stitches that I had, I couldn't move without the pain, you know.
So your wife was by your side?
Yep, she was there when I came home, and at this point they put me on a medication which she gave to me, which was called Antabuse, which if I did drink I'd get sick. Mm-hmm. And also at this point, since I was home, a lot of the people who had tried to reach out to me when I was drinking had reached out and wanted me to go to an AA meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I ended up going to one on a Monday, and that was my first meeting. And since that meeting there, I've been in it ever since, and haven't picked up a drink, and I'm on my way. And that's where it all started, you know. So it's kind of a lot of situations where, if it was the wrong place, wrong time, I wouldn't be here. Mm.
So what's the next step for you? Is the next step to keep going to AA and possibly be someone that young kids, young adults can look up to as far as a mentor?
Yeah. I mean, when you go to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing your goal is to get time, which without drinking or mm-hmm. using, whatever your addiction is. And that's where, you know, basically I concentrated on that. And then after you go through the steps, which, you know, it's not mandatory, but, you know, it's part of the process, and I have been through them. The goal is to get to the 12th step, which is basically help another sick and suffering alcoholic.
Right.
And, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know about looked up to, but definitely try to help out and see what you can do.
I've had this conversation with a number of people, and I'm – matter of fact, one of the other disc jockeys from one of the radio shows, music programs, just came in, and we were talking about that because of the issue with Prince now with the fentanyl. Mm-hmm. They found out. I don't know why, because so many young kids look up to sports and athletes today that they don't have a public service announcement out there for these kids.
Right. Yeah.
Even because, you know, he said, well, you know, they don't want to be come across as not being hip. Well, you know what? Substance abuse is not hip anymore.
Right.
We're losing hundreds of people a day throughout the country mm-hmm. on overdoses, alcohol and heroin and opioids and a bunch of things. And I don't think the number one, the actors and actresses, sports people, I don't think they're doing enough.
Right.
You know, they had these big parties for the politicians. They raised money for the politicians to get Hillary and Donald Trump right. elected. But you know what? The little guy, they're losing sight of the little guys. There's too many people that have turned to alcohol, pills, heroin, marijuana because of what may have transpired in their life.
Right.
Whether it be a passing of a loved one, mm-hmm. or be a work related, you know, it's just too many things going on in the world today, and I just don't get how they just don't all come together and do it as one. It's not hard. You need the five top athletes in the country.
Exactly.
That's not hard.
Yeah, and
that's not hard.
And it affects you know, if it hasn't affected them personally, It's going to affect someone they love or someone in their family. So they definitely can identify with
you. You know, you hit the nail right on the head, too, because I say this all the time, being at the State House for 12 years. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't affect the people in the State House, they turn the blind eye to
yeah.
it. But let me tell you something. This year here was the year that I put four or five reps had called me for people that they needed to get into treatment.
Exactly. Yep.
And it's getting worse. It's getting prevalent more and more and more. So, you know, somebody's going to do something. We're losing too many young people at too early of ages of their life, and it's ridiculous. So we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassoni. We'll be right back. Take your first step to the path to recovery today. Call Phoenix House at 1-800-DRUG-HELP, a national nonprofit leader in the treatment of substance use disorders and co-occurring behavioral health issues. Phoenix House provides comprehensive care for adults from medically monitored withdrawal services available in Rhode Island and a new facility in Quincy, Massachusetts, to residential and outpatient treatment and recovery housing for adults. For teens, we offer both intensive outpatient treatment and comprehensive outpatient services. At Phoenix House, our highly professional staff is committed to helping you achieve a better way of life through recovery. Major insurance plans and credit cards are accepted, and a sliding fee scale is available. So give us a call at 1-800-DRUG-HELP. That's 1-800-378-4435, or go online and visit us at phoenixhouse.org. Phoenix House of New England, accredited by the CARF, the Commission on Accreditation and Rehabilitation Facilities, is a national standard of excellence. Phoenix House of New England is proud to be the sponsor of Recovery Radio.
AM 790 Talk and Business. This is Recovery Radio with John Tassone.
Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. Norman Soklis is in the house. And Norman is the branch manager of Homebridge Financial Services in Smithfield. We've been talking about Norman's life, his afterlife, and moving forward life.
That's it.
13 years sober. Very, I don't want to say it's impressive, but from where you were to where you are now, it gives a lot of people with alcoholism, substance abuse, hope.
Correct.
Because there is hope. Because if you didn't make the changes that you needed to make, you probably wouldn't be sitting here today.
Correct. Absolutely.
And a lot of times too, Norman, you know, and you know, Dr. Skip, who's one of my good friends, he comes in all the time, and there's a guy that was taking 150 Vicodins a day, writing his own scripts. He was with the good, bad, and the ugly out in Hollywood. He did his thing out there, and double major at Harvard University, football player, tried out for the Bears, and found the wrong stuff and got hooked on the stuff, and now he's a substance abuse doc.
Yeah.
And his wife. I give her a lot of credit, and I give your wife a lot of credit. There he is. The feds were after him. He lost his house. He lost his practice, and she still stayed with him. As like you said, the spouses, when they go through it and the love is there, and they stay with you. It's easy. It's easy today to call a lawyer.
Oh yeah.
That's it. You know, the case is over. Because obviously, if you're the one that's got an issue with substance abuse, you're going to be the villain.
Absolutely.
Through this whole thing. But you know, you have to give the wives a lot of credit that stay with them. I mean, some people say that, you know, they're crazy to stay with somebody. But, you know, ultimately, you know, and my wife says it all the time, you got to walk in my shoes.
Exactly.
You know? So so you go to AA meetings. And I know you mentioned something, too, that you're doing some training about going into the prisons.
Yes.
And helping out in there. So tell me about that.
Yeah, one of the things that I do, and a lot of people, anyone that wants, you know, recovery and to keep it, is you got to kind of stay fresh. So I go to the Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And I just, you know, it basically gives me a defense. I mean, things happen in life all the time. And my defense is grab a bottle and drink. Or, you know, some people just take a pill. I mean, that's what I know. That's what I knew for many years. So I go to AA and I meet a lot of people. But there's also people just coming in that need help. A lot of them come from the ACI. I mean, so I actually signed up for the... it's called the Corrections Committee, where you can actually go into the ACI and do meetings in there for people who are going to get discharged someday or soon. A lot of people recent discharges. Because I think that's a huge issue that we have right now, is a lot of the ACI and the prisons are people who have problems, you know. And I'm not saying they should be handled separate, but if we could do anything to help anyone coming out of prison be a better person, that's definitely one thing we could do.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of people lose sight, Norman, is that if we take care of the people who are in there for substance abuse, alcohol, opioids, and we make them better people, there's a cost savings to that.
Absolutely.
Especially in the long run. Because if you can get a 25, 26-year-old person to, number one, stop drinking, stop using drugs, be a productive citizen, go to work, get a job, pay their fair share, the long-range plan of that particular person is not millions of dollars in medical costs.
Right.
You know, like you said yourself, how many times you went to the ER?
Exactly.
How much did that cost?
Exactly, yeah.
You know?
A lot.
How many times did you have to go on a rescue? How much did that cost? Detox. It's not one day. It could be 2 days. It could be 5 days. It could be 14 days. How much did that cost? So there's a method to my madness.
Yeah.
But I don't know why when you talk to people that's not taken into consideration. The state in itself is very short-sighted when it comes to detox and getting people help. You pay for a benefit for your medical.
Yep.
You know, you have medical. A portion of that benefit helps you with substance abuse, mental health mm-hmm. treatment. You pay for the benefit, but they don't want you to use it. They only want to give you 3 days of detox. You know it and I know it. 3 days doesn't work.
No. Nope.
Because it's only what happens after that, you get back on the street and you do the stuff again.
Correct.
So we need more long-range detox. Massachusetts just went up to, I think it was 24 days, mm-hmm. 25 days. Some states have 90-day detox. You know, we used to have all that benefit.
Right. Yeah.
And then they just kept cutting back, cutting back, cutting back. Now we're in crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Now what Absolutely. Do we do? Now, you know, the insurance companies, they basically write their own ticket here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they have to start getting on the ball because it's not working. It's not working. We have too many people dying on the street. Too many people are relapsing. Too many people are not getting the treatment that they need to get off the stuff.
Right. Exactly.
So let me ask you this question. As now as a successful businessman, do you think that gentleman who you had as a boss when you started did the right thing?
Yes. And actually, I'm still friendly with him today. I saw him at a wake probably about 8 months ago. And, you know, we still talk and sit down. And I always say that, you know, he spotted it before anyone. And, you know, it doesn't always work the first time. And alcohol, especially when they're drinking or drug addicts, when they're using, can be very obnoxious and resilient people. And that's basically what I was, you know. That was, I didn't want to be labeled. I didn't want to be told I had a problem. But he did open my eye because he took action what he had to do. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he did as much as he could.
Did it affect your work or did you work on adrenaline because of your drinking?
No, it definitely affected it in a negative way. When it got to the point where I was drinking because I needed to, I'd go into work. My main concern going to work was getting alcohol and putting it in a place where I could get to it during the day because I worked in an office building. Couldn't just walk out to my car and people look out the window.
So how'd you do it?
I put it in, there's about three bathrooms that I would put it in the bottom of the garbage and just throw a bunch of paper towels on top of it. And then, like, in the afternoon, start rubbishing through the garbage to get the bottle in the bathroom.
Mm.
You know, vodka usually.
How about at home?
At home, I found every possible spot to hide alcohol. Anywhere. I mean, and I didn't even remember where I hid a lot of it.
Did you think you were fooling her?
I did, of course. I mean, you always, you know, she would say, oh, you're drinking, something's wrong. And I said, what are you talking about? That was my, so whenever I say, what are you talking about like that, that's usually a trigger for her. So it's not, I don't usually say that, but it's just, that, you know, you think you're fooling everyone.
Yeah.
You're fooling nobody.
Now, how about your family now?
Oh, I mean, we're a tight family. I mean, we're a very close family anyway. Our parents died when I was only 24. I lost a father and mother within 10 months apart.
Wow.
Yeah, and so we were close. So for this to happen to me, I mean, it broke their heart. So obviously everyone's happy now and it's going well. I mean, it's going very well.
So do you have a normal relationship with your siblings?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I actually work with one of them. He works for me. And, I mean, all of them. All of them. We have a great relationship, holidays. Actually, we all have kids that are within a couple of years of each other. So they're having a good time playing with each other. So, yeah.
So business is going well now?
Business is good, yep.
So tell me what Homebridge does.
We do mortgages. Right now I'm focusing on veterans, trying to help out with the them, get them educated and also get them VA loans because a lot of them don't take part of that benefit. It is, you know, they have a special benefit. But I do all kinds of mortgages, and it's busy. Rates are low, and buying houses, refinances, all that good stuff.
What about veterans that are coming home now?
Yeah.
I don't think we do a good job with benefits and obviously substance abuse and mental health issues with the veterans. They said 22 veterans die each day of suicide.
Yeah.
You know, they were doing this big push-up thing for veterans on the suicide end. What is your thought about that when you sit down with a family and, you know, who is a veteran and, you know, can you pick up on that?
Yeah, I definitely can. I mean, when you're doing a purchase or a refinance for a person, you're getting pretty close to them. I mean, you're getting they're trusting you with their social security number and their income, and also trusting you that you're gonna help them find a house and actually close on it. So I do get friendly with a lot of them, and it's amazing. I don't hide my recovery. A lot of people, you know, it's not anonymous to me.
Yeah.
And if it comes up, if it happens to come up, I don't advertise it. But if it comes up, you know, about that, I talk about it, and it's amazing. You know, the veterans coming home with especially PTSD and whatnot, and some of the injuries that they've had, which required severe pain. There's addiction, and they're kind of just, as far as I can see, they're just kind of left out and to deal with. You know, I mean, they get the VA coverage and whatnot, the hospitals, but I mean, they've been in the news quite a bit for their own problems. So it's sad. It's very sad to see it. I talk to a veteran at least every day, probably right. 5-10 times a day.
Right.
So, and it's interesting. It's very, very interesting.
I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back. We're going to take another quick break. You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassoni. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Sean Tassoni. Norman Zolkulis is in the house. And Norman is from Homebridge Financial Services, and he's a branch manager. And Norman's been sober for 13 years. Lucky 13.
Lucky.
So, let's talk about when you were in detox.
Yep.
Did you ever think that you'd be sitting here today?
Not
that I'm a big shot or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but did you ever think that you'd be on this earth?
No, not in this fashion. When you're in detox and you're realizing that you can't drink, can't use drugs, whatever it is, and the idea actually sits that you may not be able to keep this up much longer or you'll die. I mean, that's basically it. I mean, you go to prison or die, they say, and that's true. I never thought that I was going to amount to anything because I always thought alcohol was what was needed for me to succeed, to be normal, actually, to live a normal life, not succeed.
Now, did you think when you were drinking you were normal?
At some points I did. I mean, in the beginning I thought it was taking this person who was abnormal because of social anxiety or whatever it is and making them normal. So I at some point I did. I knew obviously when the drinking got out of hand and I was a nuisance to everyone that I was not normal. Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people that, you know, when they call in or they send me emails and they come on the show, they say to me right out that when they're going through this process, they don't think that there's a light at the end of the tunnel because it's so painful on a number of different levels,
right?
Both mentally, physically, with the withdrawals, and your head is always, you know, not on track, and you got loved ones that you've had issues with. They reach out, they try to help you, and you say, no, I don't have a problem. Children, you know, obviously you had children later on in life, when you were sober, you have a set of twins now that are 8.
Correct.
So that type of, anxiety or that type of a situation where people look at it and they don't think that there's any hope. They think that this is it.
Yeah.
So someone as you, who has basically turned your life around.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you have a loving family. You have a set of twins. Your wife is still with you. A good business. Thank God that you advertise in some of my papers. but, you know, the story is a story.
Right.
And a lot of people don't think that there can be a story.
Right.
From being way, way down in the cellar to come up. But you're a living example of someone who could turn their life around, be a productive citizen, be a husband, and be a father.
Yeah, I mean, when I first went to meetings, and this is kind of, I think, the mindset with a lot of people going into that who feel like there is no hope and no light, I would hear someone talk and how they turn their life around, like you had said. And there's many people in mind, business owners and whatnot. And I would always say, they probably really weren't as bad as me, or they really didn't have a problem. You know, I would never think that anyone like myself, who felt what I felt when I wasn't drinking,
right,
felt. I didn't think it was possible. So, I you know, it took time, and that's the whole thing. It's all about time. It's not going to happen overnight. You didn't get your problem overnight, you're not going to fix it.
How much of a struggle has it been for you for 13 years?
The first year is tough. I mean, I surrounded myself with good people, a sponsor, and went to a lot of meetings, you know, sometimes twice a day. I mean, I heard, I go to a lot of meetings, and there's a meeting in Newport every year for the convention, and the best way to sum it up is he said, I don't have a drinking problem anymore, but I definitely have a thinking problem. But if you sit around and you think and you think this or think that, you know, you can get back to that mindset, which ultimately will lead to a drinker.
Well, it definitely does a number on you,
yeah.
Both mentally and the thinking process,
right,
of substance abuse. You know, I like to talk to the kids that are in treatment.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. I mean, when I was a business agent at Council 94, I used to have the training school. I used to talk to the young kids down there.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, if you don't straighten out now, you're only a stone's throw away from going up to the ACI.
Right.
But, you know, it's the same thing with substance abuse.
Yeah.
They get in trouble, but what happens? They go back to the same environment.
Same thing.
The same environment, the same friends, the same thought process, the same things to do after school.
Mm-hmm.
We got to get... The system is broken.
Yes, definitely.
It's definitely broken, and it needs to be fixed. And someone needs to be a leader to try to fix it.
Mm-hmm. Nothing changes if nothing changes.
Exactly. But someone, as you as a business owner now, has changed.
Correct.
And you've made a better life for you, your family. And, you know, Norman, I wish you all the best.
Thank you.
And keep on going, pal. 13. Hopefully you'll make another 13. But thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
You're listening to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, John Tassone. We'll see you next week.
Gone are the dark clouds that have me blind. It's going to be a